Good morning. Today is Wednesday, November the 28th. Joining us... Hey, we're in the middle of Christmas season. How's that for weird?
Okay.
You must not blink as often as I do.
Happens every year.
Yeah, fine. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so I guess somewhat in the spirit of the holidays, why do we say that? Why do we use brand new to mean very new?
I don't know.
Formerly, the use of brand new was limited to things made of metal. Brand is an old Anglo-Saxon word which means burn. So a horseshoe, plowshare, or sword was forged, was said to be brand new, that is, fresh from the fire.
That's what I was going to say.
The term was later applied to all new things.
Just on the tip of my tongue.
Interesting. So here we are in December, huh? Almost.
Not yet.
Yeah, it's close enough. I mean, if we round things off. Yeah, what do you guys have got? Two more weeks before you shut down for the year?
Sure, you could call it shutting down.
Well, yeah, I mean,
the staff will be working.
Yeah,
the meetings.
Yeah. The Tuesday meetings aren't there.
Yeah, the meetings. I mean, yeah, the meetings are once a week when we have them, but there's all the other times and all the stuff we're doing.
So is this a chance? I mean, you're almost at the halfway point of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The governor has the May revise. Does the county do a mid-year analysis of spending and things of that nature?
We did that a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
So that was...
So it's not quite middle of the year then. It's a little before the middle.
Yeah, that was on the 13th that we did that. We will, on the 4th, next week, do our legislative priorities update, which is kind of like I refer to it as like a political plank, I guess you'd say. Platform by which we let our staff know what our priorities are in terms of legislation, in terms of funding, and those sorts of things. And in general, it's just a minor update from year to year. You know,
does it change that much year to year, or is it
not a lot?
More just kind of these are still critical.
Not a lot. I mean, there's a few things that change that you add. There's a few things that you remove. They're somewhat outdated. There's a review to make sure that there's relevance to those things. And so they're everything from land use issues with the state to housing to our behavioral health services. So as you know, with just the state last year, there was 5,000 bills introduced. Something to that effect. And so what we do these kind of also to summarize some of the platforms that we came up with over the last year, some of the resolutions, we include those basically so that staff doesn't have to come back to us every time they want to write a letter in support of this or that we've given them direction that it's okay to
continue, carry on, so to speak.
Yeah. And so it's functional. But I encourage public to review those things and make sure that they have their voice heard.
Did the budget... session review or review session.
Mm-hmm.
Any surprises there or pretty much where things
No.
were kind of penciled in July 1?
It's pretty good. We have a decent reserve currently. We got more from our Measure S taxes, the cannabis tax, than had been predicted. So that was good. We never think that we're going to get more than predicted, and we don't know what the future of that will be, but we did get more than was predicted. We allocated the leftovers, when we call it leftovers, basically the unallocated portions of Measure Z, which will be Measure O in the future. We allocated those to roads. Was that
the plan early on, Mike, to do that when the contingencies were set aside, that if there was some leftovers?
No, I mean, when
it would go here? Because, I mean, it seems like it makes a ton of sense.
No,
but I hadn't heard whispers of it.
It wasn't the plan. It's turning out to be kind of the easiest thing to do for us. I mean, because it is in the what was written, what the public wanted, and it's written into the to that legislation. But then also... otherwise we'll be nitpicking other smaller things together. And to be quite honest, the roads is
everybody kind of agrees that the roads are an issue.
Right. Yeah. The we're kind of having our discussions between that and the radio, public safety radio system upgrade, which is $4.5 million. And so our discussions are always about, not always, but typically about how much we're going to put in that of that leftovers into Rhodes or the radio system. And it's a good, robust discussion, but Rhodes usually wins in the current context. But I think we'll be seeing probably about a $4 million upgrade to our radio systems coming up in the next year or two.
Is that just the stuff getting old or being exposed to the wind, or is this
upgrades? It's upgrades and also in technology. So, as a radio person, you know about we have analog radio, which has been what we've been, with the repeaters and those sort of things.
True and dependable. Yeah.
Right. But the digital systems are coming on, and really the old systems are becoming obsolete. And so with the digital systems, although they're somewhat a bit more complicated from a technological perspective, we can get a lot more service out of them. So it's not just voice signal from those. You can actually get video signals, two-way, and three- and four-way systems. And so it's definitely going to be an upgrade. And we're hoping to really reach in deeper into our mountainous terrain. And this kind of goes into what we're seeing now, in terms of how we do emergency response. We're seeing the issues of evacuation. How we do evacuation is something we really need to be more up to date on. We haven't quite gotten there yet, and having this radio system would definitely be helpful.
Helps to provide a little bit more data.
Well, not just more data, but a lot more connectivity and getting people the information.
Now, does that mean more towers, or you're located on more towers?
I don't know if it means more towers, but it certainly means different radios on the towers we have, for sure, and different systems in our emergency response. And we're talking about centralizing our systems as well. So, not having different centers for that.
It's 8:19.
It's sounding like Christmas all over Easy Radio 980 AM and Curry 105.3 FM. It's all your favorite Christmas music all the time. Christmas music is yours 24 hours a day on 980 AM and Curry 105.3 FM. Bing, The Carpenters, America, and more contemporary singers like Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers, Michael Bublé, and others. It's our kind of Christmas music on Easy Radio 980 AM and Curry 105.3 FM, the Christmas station. Tell your friends.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, the concept of infrastructure is one of those things I think that is either wildly exciting or totally boring.
Well, I'm
depending
an engineer.
On
I'm a
what
civil
the system
engineer, so
is.
I love it all.
Yeah.
So right up my alley.
But it,
infrastructure, go!
Yeah. Some of those, as you're weighing priorities.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, the emergency with the communication network.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think everybody gets that one. Everybody gets roads, that kind of stuff. But as far as upgrading things that are existing, like computers within the courthouse, say.
Right.
Yeah. It's probably going to be most people's response. But
well,
you got to do
upgrades,
certain things like that. How do you determine what percentage gets applied to infrastructure, whether it's deferred or it's just simple upgrades? Is there a rule of thumb that you and the others work with, or that the CAO comes in with, that says we need 11.5% or whatever the number is to go towards maintenance and upgrades of existing infrastructure?
Oh, those are moving numbers all the time, because it can really depend on your source of funding too. So whether we're not pulling from the same pot of money for any kinds of infrastructure, whether there's roads or IT or water and wastewater and all those things, they come from different locations. And in general, getting capital costs, which is the money to build things, is a lot easier than getting the money to maintain them. Just like it's easier to get money to hire people, but then their long-term benefits, not so much. And so the strategy for that can really vary depending on what those things are, whether they're infrastructure for recreation. And, you know, now we really talk about our ecological infrastructure. So, you know, we talk about rivers and we talk about our bays and we talk about the infrastructure that sustains our ecosystems, and we in these same ways now in terms of how we invest in restoration.
Well,
in
like
terms
the of levees, yeah, that's a pretty simple one.
Yeah, but and how we sustain those things too. We're talking more and more about the similarities and how they're interconnected. Even the infrastructure of our forest ecosystems. So, and now with fires and the changes we're seeing related to that, whether how we manage forests has been an issue for sure, but then managing forests for the changes that have occurred. So we thought, you know, or at least, you know, people who came here 150 years ago kind of viewed the world, and we still a little bit do, somewhat static, as if it's, you walked into it and it's just like that. It's always been like that.
Day by day is a whole lot different than century by century.
Right. And so we're seeing changes occur, and we know many of them are man-made. We know that management of forests is different than how native people manage the forest. They manage the forest using fire. They manage the forest in different ways, in very active management. It was not a passive thing. And we are putting our infrastructure into these lands vis-a-vis roads and structures and those sorts of things. And so we're really trying to figure out a new system, how we manage those things. And we have to account for how we do new things too. We can't do things the same way we always have. And those are hard conversations to get into, because you know, we're human beings and we have our egos attached to the way we've done things in the past.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. Public works, I know, you know, the normal that we talk about is the culverts, mm-hmm. and the drainages and the overlays. And mm-hmm. bridges are a whole different ballgame, though.
Right.
They are part of that you were describing.
Right. There's a separate funding. There's a separate legislation. I mean, it came out of, I think, the Loma Prieta earthquake was the last driver for reviewing all of the bridges across the state.
Yeah, the structural.
And, right, they all got reviewed, and then, you know, they're ticking them off one by one. And we really, it's very interesting because we'll spend, you know, $4 million on a bridge out in
Timbuktu,
wherever it is, right? And sometimes it makes us scratch our heads on that because what we're really trying to avoid is catastrophic failure during an earthquake. And on a bridge that maybe four people cross a day, and yet that's where we're spending some of those resources. It's good jobs. We do
understandable, you know, but you think that it would go to a higher use.
Right. Think, I mean, well, if you live out in that area, then that is the high use, and so you have to give, you know, you have to give something to that.
Sure.
So
sure.
Yeah, I mean, we're
it's curious. I know.
It's a moving target.
Notice that there's the sign. Most folks don't know where Hunter Creek is, but it's mm-hmm. one of those small little flat bridges just north of Klamath mm-hmm. on 101. They'll be blowing those bridges up next year. Mm. It's like, you know, okay. it seems like, unless there's a structural weakness, and then if there was, I would suspect that they wouldn't be allowing people to drive on it.
Well, the structural
weakness.
It's
the widening thing, and it's this and that. And, and I keep thinking, you know, guys, there's this little situation just north. Mm-hmm. That you could be, you know, put some more money towards that,
right?
To get the bypass in place to make that thing happen, because it's not going to really matter if you got a nice slick bridge if a mile up the road there's no road.
Right. Well, you do one piece at a time. You know, there's a long term plan to all of those things. We're doing it. I mean, I can't speak for Caltrans, and I can't speak for their planning horizons, but I do know that they seek some, you know, conformance in trying to hook all those things together.
And yeah,
And overall,
it's probably coordinated, but it just kind of seems like you said, you know, you got your bag of money is only so big.
Yep.
And where you put it, you know.
Well, and we, you know, we've made big decisions on even just the mode of transportations that we use too, you know, and we've let ourselves down, literally down the road of the way we design and use roads.
KINS News and Information Time is 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, American Ag Credit, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Mike, considering infrastructure in our area, there's a lot of different ways that people define infrastructure. You know, it's from the power lines, the streets, the sewers. Mm-hmm. Housing is now starting to move into that definition, that functional definition of infrastructure for the community. Okay, which is healthy. I mean, I think that makes a ton of sense.
Uh-huh.
As you look at the housing in our area, how has the county either gotten behind more single-family housing or maybe starting to recognize that that's an issue?
Well, we know it's an issue, and we definitely talked about it a lot in the general plan update. There was a policy in there that I fundamentally disagreed with and was one of the reasons why I voted against the general plan, which was the principally permitting of residential, single-family residential on every single timber and ag parcel in the county. And from that perspective, it's not that I don't want people to live, you know, have rural experiences and live in rural places, and certainly don't want, you know, to move people around per se. But when we see what's happening with the fires around our county, around our well, it's certainly in our county, but certainly around the state, we have some real concerns about that. It's not a policy that most counties have. As a matter of fact, I think we might be the only one that does that.
Residual from times gone by?
Yeah, this is a new policy. Usually what we've had you know, we don't principally permit residential in the past. What we've done is it had to be ancillary to the uses. So the highest and best value or use to timber lands is timber. And the highest and best use for ag lands is ag. And we had a policy by which if you had a house, you know, you would have a house if it was supporting the timber use. It was,
so like if you had a cabin or a bunkhouse.
Or the ag use. Now it's principally permitted, which means it can't just get in the way of whatever that means of that use. Part of the problem is that these will get in the way of timber because people will move into them without the intention of being in a timber related area. So when timber uses start to occur, there we're going to have conflicts.
So is this more of a loosey-goosey definition?
No.
Or is it just something that perhaps that consequence wasn't played out in?
Well, I think there was a lot of pressure from our real estate interests and from maybe from the builders. But in any case, we'll have this will have long term consequences. It has long term consequences for public safety in terms of, you know, we have a lot. We have over 1 million acres in Humboldt County that's not in any fire district. We have, we're being concerned about fire starting from say PG&E and from roads, but the more we put people into more remote areas, then the more likelihood we're going to have of all of these things occurring. There is that, and then responding to emergencies in these spaces is very expensive and daunting. And even though people will say, well, I don't want to pay for it, then emergency responders really have a moral obligation to do their job, and they do it. And yeah, they do respond.
The genetic calling, it doesn't matter where they're they're going.
They're going, yeah. And so we have to be cognizant of that. And so we may have more discussions about that coming up with our board. I'm not totally sure about that, but it is a concern that we have. So, but that, I'll tell you, that was to address housing. The best place to actually really do policy for housing is in places where you have services, water, sewer, schools, those sorts of things.
Infill where you are.
Right, exactly. I think Eureka is really moving in a good direction with regard to that. I've seen their new general plan, and I would say it's really advancing in a way that addresses a lot of that, with looking at raising their height limit to 6 stories in the downtown areas, looking at freeing up some spaces. And I think there's going to be pressure on Humboldt County, especially Eureka, as we see quite literally climate refugees. I have had 1-2 in my house in the last few weeks, people escaping smoke and
coming
fire.
Coming over from the valley, yeah.
Yeah, just coming up from the Bay Area, even out of the Bolinas area.
Yeah, it's kind of going down through North Bay, yeah.
It's terrible. And we've seen a lot of these summertime maps where everything's red and orange, and then there's this green dot, which is where we are. And it's not just because it just happens to be that way, but it is by the nature of our location on the planet and where we are on the weather streams. And that's why we have redwoods here. I mean, they have evolved. I mean, they've been through a lot of temperature changes over time, and they have evolved in this place and are here for a reason. And I think for us, it'll be a long-term advantage in terms of this is a desirable place, and we love it, and we're going to see more people wanting to be here soon enough, I think. So we should be prepared for that.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:43. We'll be back with more from Mike Wilson.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The new Los Angeles flight is a great success. The planes have been full, so book now for your holiday travel. Don't miss getting a flight home for the holidays. And just in case you haven't heard, we'll have direct flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a couple hours away from the Mile High City whenever you want to go. This makes connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org. Happy holidays.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, last time we talked a little bit about the offshore oil, not offshore oil.
We're against
offshore
oil.
Wind, the generation stuff.
Yeah.
The TerraGen guy was in a couple weeks ago talking about the one up on Monument.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been any further development with the offshore project?
It seems to be moving forward. There's some concerns related to fishermen making sure that they don't
run into them. Okay.
Right, it doesn't impact their ability to get to certain places. But I would say the counter to that is climate change is causing acidification of our oceans, and certainly, that will have an impact on our ability to fish if we see our phytoplankton unable to reproduce themselves because the pH is not appropriate. So we want to make sure we...
Is that what the fishermen are asking about?
No, the fishermen...
Or they just don't want to run into these things?
What I'm saying is it's sort of the same thing as when we're talking about the environmental impacts with the wind generation up on our... Up on Monument. It's like the issues tend to be visual...
But these things are so far off.
Those ones, but I'm talking about on the Monument.
General.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, or about certain species. And I would submit that a 2-degree temperature raise on the planet will have huge visual impacts. It's going to have huge species impacts. And, we really have to balance these, some of these concerns.
Everything's a risk reward.
Yeah, but we are really in a big risk. I mean, this issue of
that doesn't seem like
climate change.
There's a lot of negative associated with these.
when you compare them to the broader issue of sea level rise, which actually for me is can be a big issue in Humboldt Bay, temperature rise in the ocean and on the surface, as well as what I was talking about, acidification of our oceans. That's probably one of the biggest issues we should be really thinking about, because if we are not, and we're seeing some of that occur in areas to the north of us and other areas where shellfish are having a hard time reproducing because their larvae are not able to basically create the calcium carbonate, which is the shell,
yeah,
because the pH isn't correct. If we see more of that, then, I mean, really the base of our ecosystems in the oceans are phytoplankton, and if they can't create their shells, we are in big trouble. And so what I'm saying is, like, when we balance the issue of fishing versus getting clean energy, these are some of the things we should be really considering in that discussion.
It's not an either or discussion, though.
No,
is it?
It's not necessarily an either or, but we have to have that in the mix. And
after we had talked, I was just kind of thinking about it. It's like an airplane, you know, the fishing boat, airport. Okay, you got these things; they're not moving around.
Right.
They know where they are if they got their maps. Okay, it's like there's a shoal.
Right.
Stay off the reef. Okay, there. Well, stay off access. Stay out of that area.
I mean, to the credit, or to the concerns of the fishermen, we have to be. They get the short end of the stick all the time. They're always told that, you know, that there's not going to be an impact here, and there is, or they're going to get resources there, and they don't. And so, I understand. I think their concerns are reasonable. We just have to take it into the context of the bigger picture. And
so,
what is the
footprint or the set aside for this?
Well, I don't know what it is right now, but we're looking at starting off with I think somewhere around a dozen, but it could go for a long ways. There could be a lot of these out there. The wind resource is huge off our shore, and it's location specific. And I would say that we are really looking at now the advantage of Humboldt Bay, and now that the harbor district is really starting to evaluate a place to service these things, and we could be seeing a lot of jobs and infrastructure, which will help fishermen and will help other industries too. So
good stuff.
Looking
good
forward
stuff
to it.
Thanks for coming by.
Always great to be here.
See everybody tomorrow.